The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/TDI. Well, hello, it's Andrew Horowitz, and welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is part four of our special edition, where we're interviewing and talking with some of the great leaders in the area of fintech, some of the great minds, whether they're chief technology officers or chief marketing officers or people that are developing some new concepts that are just outstanding. And today we have Tom Eck, who's the CTO of IBM's industry platforms, the Watson division. And also with us is Casey Herbis, who is the chief marketing officer for Quicken Loans. So this special edition that we're doing here is coming to you from the Benzinga FinTech Awards for 2018, where we spent some time listening to some unbelievable presentations and some information from people who really are shaping the world of financial technology, apps, programming, back office, all sorts of things. So I hope you're enjoying this. If you have any questions, of course, you can write to me. Just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and click on the Ask Andrew section. And there you'll find how to actually write in direct to the show, and we'll answer it on an upcoming show. After we finish this series, we're going to get right down to a bunch of listener questions because we have a lot of them. So let's get right on with our first guest that's up right now. And with us today right now is Tom Eck. He's the CTO at IBM's Watson division. Pretty cool stuff here. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Andrew.
So let's talk about what are you doing over there at IBM Watson? What's the big thing? What's happening on the financial services side of things?
Right. So I specialize in our industry platform. So that's where we're taking kind of the toolbox of technology that we have.
Right.
And you know, I contend that there's very few out there that just want to buy pure technology. If you drop a box of technology on somebody's desk, you probably have created more problems than solutions. So now, technology is the great enabler, but my job is to help figure out how we put these together, and not just all IBM assets, but third parties such as the fintechs that are at this event today, and actually build real solutions that solve problems for financial services companies.
So I know your background has been in the area of AI.
Yep.
And you know, you kind of marry that whole idea of AI and finance. I mean, is it going to be a day that we have to worry there's going to be like a war of the AI bots that are going to be just somehow self-hacking? And I mean, seriously, I mean, it seems like there's a certain amount of final accountability that we want individuals to have on their own finances, right?
Yeah.
Now, would it be nice if we could just have an AI, which I guess would be equivalent to some of the various algos and things like that,
yep,
that are in the investment business, but to make money, make money, make money. However, is there a limitation to this? That everybody starts to just play off of each other's and then we got the Terminator?
Well, I'll tell you this. So back in the day, I did a stint in biotechnology, and one of the courses that we had to take was bioethics. And I learned something there that stuck with me today, and it's just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we are equipped with some very powerful tools right now, and obviously there's lots of debate going on about you know, what they should be applied to. I think the appropriate constraints have to be put in place, certainly. And I don't know. It seems it takes a scandal to really get serious conversation going on around that. But
I
mean,
I don't mean to interrupt you, yeah, but it's one thing on the bioethics side of things,
yeah,
right? When you have some people that are looking to better things and all that, I mean, what are they going to do? I mean, there's some profit issues and they can cut corners and maybe all that. When it comes to finance, come on, you know what happens, right? When you see a good thing and it gets really good, then somebody's taking it, distorting it, butchering it, bastardizing it, and then it becomes, like you said, until this is some kind of a scandal. Or as I say, everything is fine when the tide is high. That tide comes down, you see all the muck on the bottom.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that drew me to take this this position at IBM is the intersection of what we could do with blockchain and AI. So,
uh-huh,
Take away the cryptocurrency part. I'm just talking about the
straight up blockchain.
Right,
the technology.
Yeah. And in particular, you know, the distributed ledger and the smart contracts. So I think there's amazing things that are going to happen when we combine smart contracts and AI. And maybe those smart contracts will provide the rails that define, you know, let's call it the sandbox within which an AI construct can operate. And maybe those contracts are legislated, or maybe they are from personal, maybe if it's a personal trading bot, maybe it's the constraints that person wants to put on what its bot can do on its behalf.
Right. You know, when I think about the blockchain, I think about the distributed ledger, I kind of go back to Napster. Wasn't Napster like the initial distributed ledger with having a decentralized place that you could download from various places, and it failed? Especially, what was the other one where we... BitTorrent. BitTorrent. Wasn't BitTorrent the blockchain of today?
Well, in terms of the distributed storage of the files, and that there was no one central location that you can go after.
Exactly.
So, in that sense, it was true. However, the real big differentiator was, I don't think anybody back in those days, and I certainly use those, I'm a big music buff, but I don't think any of us wanted to have an indelible record of our download.
Correct. That was the one constraint,
yeah,
right?
Right.
It wasn't me.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
So,
you could set your system that you're not sending anything out.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm just taking. I'm not giving.
Yeah, I think that goes against the spirit, but that's what I was doing, by the way.
So this distributed ledger, or the blockchain now. Yeah. So how? A couple of questions I have about that. Obviously, everything's based on the internet and connectivity. So we know that. And if that blows, we're all done. So let's just get beyond that, right? But when you talk about this and the whole distributed ledger situation, the advancement of that, which has happened it's been around, but it really picked up very strong lately. Do you see that from not only a authentication process, which is obviously very important, and then on top of that, a security and safety component, is that really why it's so important right now? That helps you then build all sorts of platforms on top of that, that allows for individuals to feel comfortable about the fact, and the companies that they're working with get a back end. I think didn't the first stock transaction through blockchain go on like last week?
I believe so.
It was something that went on. So what is the big thing that you're going to be doing? What is like the next version of Watson AI / blockchain? What is it really going to tackle?
Yeah, so we're tackling real world problems. IBM has set up more, let's call them real world blockchains, blockchain networks really is the focus. So it's not just the technology, it's the participants that are in the network that are solving a problem. And one broad set of problems that we're trying to solve is to take the friction and cost out of what otherwise are very expensive in numerous dimensions, types of interactions to have. So typically we're talking multi-company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the more parties that are involved, you can imagine in some type of shipping or logistics, you can imagine that supply chain has many companies. Today, each company has its own ledger that a reconciliation has to happen at some point. And that's a lot of cost. So if everybody can agree that there's one ledger and all the participants agree on every transaction, you do not need to reconcile. So that takes out a tremendous amount of cost and friction.
Well, it also takes out the potential for a lot of fraud.
That too.
So, and a lot of fraud.
Exactly. So there's due to the cryptography that's involved, you cannot say you did not commit a transaction.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So
I don't know where it went.
There's many fantastic properties that are just built on very primitive and simple cryptographic principles. But the I got involved in blockchain really from the cryptocurrency. Well, two things. I've always been a crypto buff.
Mm.
So I've always been involved in cryptography. But then when I read the first paper, you know, the famous Bitcoin paper, it literally just blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I still say that if and when we figure out who's really behind this, it's going to be a blockbuster movie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Soji.
Yeah.
In terms of, I don't want to get into a whole discussion of cryptocurrencies, because we can go around in circles. It could be good, it could be bad, because obviously that also has been bastardized, like we just talked about, compared to where it started. right? Nobody thought that Bitcoin would be worth this much either. It was supposed to be just a, you know, everything changes, right? So we see all these commercials about IBM Watson. Mm. One of the fascinating things I see is the healthcare. And I see that. I see also, I agree, you know, finding, being able to do more than super calculations, just bringing data together and then artificially scanning and doing it, you know, the work of 1,000 doctors in a minute. But also you mentioned something like shipping, which FedEx has been doing pretty well for a long time, UPS, et cetera, you know, postal service, mm-hmm. where, you know, they pick up your item and you can get a text that's confirmation, which is not a blockchain, but it's parts of it, right? So it's saying, hey, you did this and we got that. I could see that totally in the shipping. I could see it for stock ownership too.
Yes.
It's going to piss off a lot of people in the business because it's going to save a lot of money on the custody houses and all that, but it's just the way it goes. They've been making a lot of money in this for a long period of time. Same thing with banking. Yep. To a degree. Not, I'm not talking about coins now. I'm talking about blockchain, yep. obviously. So there's kind of a whole bunch of things that gives us the ability to have, as you mentioned, an indelible record of not only historical, but all that, right? So that's a big thing for you guys.
Yeah, even just in that realm where there's actually nothing that's too fancy that we're talking about there, just tracking the provenance of an object, okay? It could be art, okay? It could be any type of collectible. I just found out one of the blockchains that we're involved in, that we're operating, is involved in diamond, in the diamond trade. And I didn't know that every diamond has some type of unique physical mark that is put on it. Hmm. And that you cannot remove and you can't see by eye. Now, every time that diamond changes ownership, that's tracked on a blockchain. So if it ever appears it goes stolen. And it appears in the black market. It's very obvious where it kind of fell off the legit path, if you will.
The last holder.
That's right.
So this is the old use of diamonds, like in the James Bond movies, to pay off somebody.
Yeah.
For, you know, under the table and all that. You're saying that now this is at least giving us, again, a way to track and all that. So we're going to do away with that whole black market. Cryptocurrency is a different discussion of the black market, but in theory, this can really do a whole bunch for loss mitigation.
Yep.
Black market use of
so the insurance companies are going to love this.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Another way that it could be used is against counterfeit, let's say, luxury items. So my wife seems to like these expensive bags.
Yeah,
Okay, right. And I do know that there is a fair degree of counterfeiting that's going on. Now, IBM, we just announced at our Think Conference in March that coming out of IBM Research is this, it's a chip that I'm told is about the size of a grain of sand, I believe.
Wow.
Okay, that I guess we could think of it as the equivalent of like an RFID tag.
Right, yep,
okay?
yep.
Now, can you imagine embedding that in, and they're relatively cheap. You embed that at the factory where your Louis Vuitton bag is being manufactured. And every time that changes hands mm-hmm. between shippers and it goes to a distribution depot and then it goes to a store, and then even, let's say my wife is the first one to buy it, and then maybe she resells it in the secondary market. But that is indelibly tracked on a blockchain. So you as a buyer, you go to a store that maybe you're not that familiar with, and you're like, wow, I can't believe the price of this Louis Vuitton mm-hmm. bag.
Yeah.
It seems to be good to be true. Oh, well, look, here's an app that you can scan that. And
so you're saying it was scanned. That's what I was questioning where the point was. How do we figure this out? So now it will be a scannable chip that then can report back or somehow in a smart manner, which is maybe some of the not just blockchain, but now smart technology to then recognize the chip information and kind of scan it to find out, search the blockchains out there. Because a lot of blockchains, right?
This would be one blockchain for this.
For this specific right, thing, right?
Exactly.
So you would search that and say, give me the Louis Vuitton overpriced yeah. bag.
Give me the provenance of this particular bag that is in my hand. And if I can track this all the way back to the manufacturer, mm-hmm. and there would obviously have to be some type of, just like when you go to a website, there's the SSL certificate that lets you know that you really are on CNN.com and not fakenews.cnn.com. Yeah. In the same way, there would be this proof that the bag originated indeed at Louis Vuitton, because there's strong cryptographic material that proves it says Louis Vuitton.
Right. And then it's not, and obviously just for those of you that have no idea what blockchain is all about, it's not just a piece of paper that could burn a fire. And that's also distributed. So there's all this multiple levels of distribution of all this, so it just can't get lost in one day. Awesome stuff, Tom Eck, IBM Watson Division, the CTO, Chief Technology Officer. So that's a big guy, major dude we scored here. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Andrew.
All right, thanks. Now, before we get to our next guest, as mentioned at the top of the show, this series is sponsored by Health IQ. Now, here's what's really cool about Health IQ. They've developed a way to save you money. I mean, that's music to most people's ears. Most people need some form of life insurance. And if you are healthy, for example, we know that people eat well. Maybe you're a vegan. Maybe you're a runner. Maybe you swim competitively. Maybe you bike. Maybe you weight train. Whatever it may be, you can qualify for some pretty spectacular discounts, savings, money in your pocket back. And these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. We've seen that Health IQ customers save between anywhere from 4 to 33% on their life insurance. And just because you've done your job at making sure that you're healthy, why not get rewarded for that? So it's very easy. You can go right to the website that they have and you can check out what the potential savings are. There's a variety of things to tell you, all sorts of information about this. And that's at healthiq.com/TDI. Now, they have quizzes on there, information on there. You can talk with their agents and make sure that you're getting the best possible rate that you can because you're taking care of yourself. There's a lot of surveys out there that talk about how there's a much lower risk, obviously, of that's associated with things like, well, if you are active, you have a 56% lower risk of heart disease and 20% lower risk of cancer, 58% lower risk of diabetes. And that's what this is all about. That's how you get these extraordinary savings. Now, we talk about investments here all the time and we talk about finances. But one of the things that people have to make sure that your family is protected is life insurance. And why not get the best rate possible? So do me a favor. Go to our friends over at healthiq.com/TDI, and some specials listed there, and get your best rate possible. Next up, we got Casey Herbis, who's the CMO, Chief Marketing Officer for Quicken Loans. Hey, what's going on?
How are you? How are you doing today? Just got in town.
Go Blue.
Yeah, it was snowing in Detroit 2 weeks ago. It's about 90 degrees.
That's in New York.
Yeah.
Come down to me in South Florida, buddy.
Yeah, well.
It's a whole different world.
It's been raining hard the last couple of days.
Yeah, you find that you got it. You guys from Detroit always have to find the misery in my weather.
That's right.
It feels better that way, right?
When you have 9 months of winter, you've got to learn how to rip on other geographic
A lot of good
locations.
Stuff going on in Detroit. So here's the thing. So, my wife's from Detroit.
Oh, yeah. Whereabouts?
She grew up in Southfield, West Bloomfield, and all that.
That's where I'm from. Down.
Are you?
Yep.
So, about all the good Coney Islands up there, get them good dogs and Leos.
I mean, I know this is a podcast, but
you can talk food the whole time.
Just go to, see a photo of me. I've done some damage at a Lafayette and American. And
so which one? Wait, hold on.
I'm a Lafayette guy.
Yeah. See, people that don't know what we're talking about here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. There's a whole thing going on. Wasn't it like brothers or something?
I think it was a family thing. It was a family rift probably 20, 30, 40 years ago, whatever it may be.
And they opened up next door to each other
and they've competed every day since.
This is a hot dog place that, the whole shebang, the hot dog with the mustard, sauerkraut, the onions, all the good stuff.
No menu,
chili dogs,
no credit cards.
And they charge you
how they feel.
And you either go to one side, the Lafayette, and you go to the other one, and everybody,
you're loyal to one.
Yeah. So let's talk about the whole mortgage business. Obviously, with rates being pretty low for a long period of time, things have been really good. And you were actually, just to let everybody know, this is the inventor of the whole Rocket Mortgage, but campaign.
Yep.
Campaign.
Yeah, Rocket Mortgage.
How did you come up
campaign.
With that?
Yeah, so I just joined Rocket Mortgage a year ago, Quicken Loans, and running the Rocket Mortgage brand a year ago. And one of the things for us is we've been working through this whole creative strategy of trying to make the complex simple. Let's be honest. I come from the car business. There's a lot of similarities between buying an automobile and getting a mortgage. Once every 5-7 years, the process is intimidating, can be daunting, complex. People are afraid of it. We see there's 30-40% of people on the sidelines that in a good market, they could refi, but they just don't know how. So we're all about, with our Rocket Mortgage product, is how to make the complex simple. And so that's an easy thing to translate into creative. You know, there's a lot of noise in the multi-screen, multimedia world that we live in. You know, my biggest fear is we do marketing and advertising that's forgettable. You can spend all the money in the world.
That's a problem for you.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah. Is if, you know, we're fortunate. We've got healthy budgets. You know, you'll see a Rocket Mortgage ad anywhere, anytime, you know, digital in the broadcast space. You know, but my biggest fear is we do something that's boring and forgettable.
Yep.
So we try to make sure. So for the Super Bowl this past year, we went to 11 agencies. I pitched them all a brief. I saw over 100, 120 ideas. And over the course of 3 months, we literally whittled it down to one idea. We pitched it to Dan Gilbert and Jay Farner, our CEO. They loved it. And we went and secured Keegan-Michael Key, who's, you know, big on, you know, big actor, comedian from Detroit, coincidentally enough. And we pitched him the campaign. He loved it, helped shape it, write it with us. And we, you know, we shot it, got it up for the Super Bowl, and it's been a big success. That'll be our campaign, that our confidence campaign, as we call it, and that we'll be carrying out through the rest of the year.
So now, one of the things that you're trying to do, and tell me, you know, clarify this for me a little bit though, is making the whole process. Well, obviously, that would be smart for your company to do this, right? Let's just get that straight. You know, you want to make getting a mortgage a little bit of an easier task. You said less daunting and intimidating, because one of the things you mentioned is that, you know, people are like, well, I'm not sure why, because you got 500 pages, you got attorneys, you got title people, you got rooms that you got to feel that, you know, what am I signing here? I don't understand the language that I'm dealing with. How are you making that easier?
Yeah, so from a product standpoint, I mean, I you know, I'm 46 years old, and I'm considered myself
good.
Well, there's a lot of miles on these tires, but, you know, everyone in life, you know, I'm a mid adopter, and I discovered Amazon Prime 3-4 years ago, right? I was one of those like, what do I need that for? Now Amazon Prime has changed
now
my
what?
Life.
Now
I no longer go to Costco, right. And you know, most of my, you know, short little trips are you know, now it's all with a click of a finger, mm-hmm. or a swipe of a thumb. But from a Rocket Mortgage standpoint, just it's that same type of philosophy, is how to take something that could be daunting, complex, what have you, and try and make it as simple as it can, so we can break down the barriers of entry, if you will, on looking to see, hey, do I have the ability, maybe, you know, how much of a home can I afford? You know, where am I at a position of cash equity that I can pull out? So we want to make sure from a product standpoint, we make it as simple as possible. So a client of ours can do anything all the way through online, or they've got the safety valve, if you will, of, you know what, at this point, I don't know if I'm comfortable. I'd rather pick up the phone and talk to a banker. And so we see a lot of people start off online. Probably 70% of our, you know, transactions start online, and then a good share of them jump back out to talk to a banker and maybe come back in multiple times. So the good thing about it is it's not just an online experience with no one on the other line. You have the ability to, you know, have that, you know, that lifeline, if you will, of a banker that can help you even make anything more simple along the way.
Are you, do you think you'll be getting into this whole chatbot thing? We just had two different discussions about this chatbot thing.
Yeah, there's a couple different things. One is we just rolled out 3 months ago the ability for you to pay your Quicken Loans or Rocket Mortgage payment online, or I'm sorry, via Alexa, right? And so that's a skill now on Alexa. So
hey, Alexa, pay my bill.
Pay my Rocket Mortgage.
Yeah.
Okay, you set it up as a skill and go. I will share with you, we're probably less than 30 days away from rolling that out on smartwatches, iOS and Android. Same exact thing. So, you know, again, everyone wants, you know, life to be as simple and as easy as it can be. And, you know, take the angst of, you know, at the end of the month, beginning of the month, whenever it may be, how do we try and make things as radically simple as we can? So relative to chat, absolutely. You know, we're a big partner with Facebook from a spending standpoint. We have them in our office every month. And that's one of the things we're working on now. You already have financial companies that you can have that chat interaction. And we want to absolutely have that, like with the Facebook or other, you know, AI experiences, is people want to have that that ability to have that one-on-one interaction. So chat is absolutely a big part of it.
It would be great to see. I think one of the things that maybe, I mean, this is, you know, kind of getting into a layman's view of this, but when you look at, you know, some of the daunting issues about, hey, do I, you know, what am I going to do with this mortgage? Should I do something or not? The question always is, well, how much is it going to cost me? Because you don't know what's embedded or not, depending on the banks, right? You don't know how many points are they adding, and the bank's like, well, we have to add points. No, you don't have to add points. Points are what they want to add. I mean, let's be honest, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and, you know, well, how many years differential is this? I can save 0.5%. You know, I got a closing cost that a part of the deal. I got to pay some legal fees. I got to pay all that. I know that. So is there an easy way, and I say this totally blind, Is there an easy way to somebody can just punch in some numbers and figure out, like, is this a good deal for me to do?
Yeah, literally, you know, with our Rocket Mortgage product, you can have, you can answer those types of questions for yourselves. Like, you know, what is maybe, what is the better customized solution for me, if you will, in terms of, you know, money down, five, you know, 15 year, 30 year, depending where the rates are, you know, ARMs, whatever it may be. So we have that ability within our product. And then again, you know, we have, you know, the opportunity for our clients to pick up the phone and talk to bankers and understand, try and customize, you know, the right mortgage solution for whatever their needs might be.
So since you are in the marketing area, and we've been seeing a lot of stuff, not disparaging any particular company at all, but is there a concern, because you mentioned you have a you have Facebook in, which means you have a big spend with them.
Big spend.
That's why they come in.
Yeah, so, yeah, they're flying in.
Is there any concern? I'm not asking you to say about, I'm not asking you specifically about that, because I know you can't, honestly, I'm not even asking that. Even if you could release, I'm not asking that. But I seem to be a little concerned with some of the way of all the fake users, not Facebook, but other fake users and things that are just fake news and fake accounts and fake it. Is that going to come up in the conversation somewhere?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when Mark Zuckerberg sits in, you know, sits in Washington for a few days, that was fascinating. You know, it was fascinating television for a wide variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, but I, you know, I watched it, you know, curious from a consumer standpoint, but also as an advertiser and a large partner, you know, a large partner of Facebook. I mean, I think, you know, the last couple of years, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of angst and tension on what is, you know, transparency of an audience we're able to reach, transparency on where our ads run. I mean, you think about what the hot topic was in, you know, the advertising marketing world, I called a year ago, you know, running ads in, you know, on, you know, extremist websites. And, you know, I was at an automaker before this, and you know, with the tens of millions of dollars we spent, there was a small pocket change amount that ran on some of that, but it's so, like, so layered deep that you just, you have to scrub to even find it out. So there, a couple things. One is, I mean, we all want to seek, you know, transparency into the audiences, you know, audiences, and make sure they're eyeballs. I mean, at the end of the day, when you're an advertiser, you're buying for eyeballs and share of mind, but also brand safety, you know, in the multi-touch retargeting world that you can do in marketing. It's not a matter of, you know, once, you know, once we
it's
have
not
the
direct
ability,
it's a spread.
Yeah, I mean, it's a total smart very, you know, targeted,
smart shotgun.
Yeah. Laser, you know, laser focused,
right?
But making sure that, you know, we're finding real people, but be that you know, our advertising, our product and brand isn't put in front of, you know, and put on question in front of questionable audiences,
right?
And with people with ill intent.
Right. Casey Hubris, Chief Marketing Officer for Quicken Loans. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks. Well, that's going to wrap it for this episode. Coming up, we have Kenny Glick from hitthebid.com and Kumash Arumagen from Acern. Pretty interesting stuff there. Wait till you hear what's going on with these two. I had a lot of fun with them. So make sure that you stay tuned. Make sure you go over to iTunes and do a review. Make sure you follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz, one word. Make sure to be here next time. We have some great guests on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for joining me.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.